WMRA News. I'm Bob Libicki. Northern Virginia says it is not ready to begin relaxing COVID-19 restrictions, and the governor agrees. We check in with two first-generation JMU freshmen to see how they're coping with an upended first year in college. And the Harrisonburg-Rockingham Free Clinic has also had to make changes to adapt to the pandemic, and we'll hear from its executive director. This is the WMRA Daily for Tuesday, May 12th. Virginia may be on the verge of relaxing COVID-19 restrictions for businesses, at least most of the state. The governor is now moving toward a regional approach. Virginia Public Radio's Michael Pope reports.
People sometimes call Northern Virginia Nova. Sometimes people in Nova talk about Rova, the rest of Virginia, a distinction that's sometimes cultural, sometimes political. These days, it's a distinction that can be read in case statistics on COVID-19. That's why Loudoun County Board of Supervisors Chairwoman Phyllis Randall is urging Governor Ralph Northam to exclude Nova from the first phase of reopening, at least for now.
This may have been the hardest decision I've ever made as an elected official.
Over the weekend, she joined with leaders from Fairfax, Arlington, Alexandria, and Prince William to urge the governor to keep Northern Virginia out of Phase 1 reopening. She says all the data points show the region isn't there yet.
I thought it would be quite a bit of hubris for me to, no matter how much I wanted to open and want to open, substitute my desires, my judgment, my thoughts, and open.
The governor says he's considering keeping Northern Virginia out of Phase 1 reopening, and that he'll announce some kind of formal plan to separate Nova from Rova later this week.
We feel that we're at a place where we can safely go into Phase 1 in most areas of Virginia. Obviously, Northern Virginia is an exception.
For most of Virginia, the first phase of reopening could be as early as this Friday. Northam says he'll make an announcement about that on Wednesday. And he also says he'll provide some more detail about a potential delay in Northern Virginia. I'm Michael Pope.
More than half of today's college students are the first in their families to attend college in the U.S. And as this spring semester wraps up, the coronavirus is adding a whole new layer of obstacles. From partner station VPM, Megan Pauley spoke with two first-generation college freshmen at James Madison University about how they're coping.
For JMU freshmen Pierre Mbala and Brooklyn Kyer, the transition from in-person to online learning has been
annoying.
Difficult.
Both have moved off campus and in with family during the pandemic. For Brooklyn, it's been hard having to use a chat box to ask questions of teachers instead of raising her hand as she normally would.
So then I had to wait till after the class is over to then ask her the question.
Pierre is missing his classmates and the rhythm of on-campus life that used to help him stay on track.
Because I had an easier routine because I'd be moving. I'd either ride my bike to a new location and then I'd know I need to be doing this, this, and that. I need to check this.
Right now, we're hoping that all of these students will continue to move forward.
That's Sean Mooney, director of Valley Scholars, a program for first-generation college students at JMU. He says the novel coronavirus has presented some novel challenges for these students.
This is something that very easily could have a student throwing up their hands in the first week or two and saying, you know, I just can't do this.
Research shows that first-generation students are much less likely to graduate than their peers. They face social, cultural, and financial obstacles that other students don't. First-gen students often have extra family responsibilities, too. The Valley Scholars Program at JMU was set up to help them tackle these issues, but now the coronavirus pandemic is adding more complications. Freshman Brooklyn Kyer has been juggling her own assignments while also helping her 4-year-old niece with her schoolwork.
So, learn her ABCs and how to write her name and her numbers.
She also tried to recruit her younger siblings as an audience for a speech she had to record.
It was difficult because my siblings kept on making me laugh, so I had to start over a lot.
But she's been deliberate about setting aside specific times to focus on her assignments, early in the morning and late in the evening. And she's also checking in with a mentor for extra support. Valley Scholars Director Sean Mooney says faculty and mentors have been keeping in regular contact with students. He knows it's been hard for some to continue classes online.
We have one student who is going to another family member's house to complete work because the access at home is not adequate because there's no broadband and there's no high-speed cellular service in the area he lives.
But it's not just current college students Mooney's worried about. The program works with prospective first-gen students, too, in middle and high school. Before the pandemic, seniors were on track to start college in the fall.
The other day, my wife went to the grocery store close to our home, and there's one of our Valley Scholar students who's a senior. She's working behind the glass wall that they put up in food line for the cashiers because she has to. Her family needs the money and the income.
Mooney says high schoolers in the program won't lose their full tuition scholarships if they can't start college in the fall. Normally, seniors would be meeting with freshmen like Brooklyn and Pierre in person to see campus and get a taste of college life. The university had planned a summer picnic, but that's been canceled. Now they'll be meeting virtually. I'm Megan Polly.
Virginia Commonwealth University is testing a new drug that could help those most affected by COVID-19. If study results show it's helpful, the medication could be available soon, Virginia Public Radio's Sandy Houseman reports.
When our lungs are infected with a virus, small proteins called cytokines signal the immune system to attack. But Dr. Antonio Abate, medical director of the clinical research unit at Virginia Commonwealth University, says some people have an extreme reaction, producing a storm of cytokines that causes excessive inflammation.
Patients that have elevated markers of inflammation tend to have a progressive disease requiring more and more oxygen and evolution towards requirement of a ventilator. And some patients, unfortunately, don't make it.
A drug called canakinumab reduces inflammation of joints, and Abate hopes it will do the same in our lungs and heart. It's already approved to treat arthritis.
So if these results were to be favorable, this drug could be easily available commercially all over the world.
VCU joins an international group hoping to enroll a total of 450 patients. I'm Sandy Houseman.
Finally today, as hospitals and doctors' offices work on managing COVID-19, the Harrisonburg-Rockingham Free Clinic has also had to make some changes to adapt to the pandemic. WMRE's Chris Boros spoke with the Free Clinic's executive director, Summer Sage.
At the very end of February, we got together and had a conversation about this coronavirus and put some protocols into place immediately. I feel like to a certain extent, we were ahead of the game for our clinic and our patients. We were sending out information to our volunteer providers. We were sending out information to our patients. So that's been really great. The thing that's been difficult for us is that we do have a majority of volunteer providers whom we conversed with and said, guys, we need you right now to stay home and stay safe. We've been finessing that for a while now and coming up with our Wednesday marathon clinics where we have a 12-hour day with our staff coming in and providing care to patients either in person or via telehealth.
For someone who doesn't know what the model is of the free clinic and what a volunteer provider is all about, can you kind of explain that?
We have one staff nurse practitioner, and then we have a PRN nurse practitioner. The rest of our capacity for seeing patients comes from providers in our community who volunteer at the clinic to see patients.
And when you say a provider, you're talking about doctors and nurses, right?
And specialists, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And they come in and just volunteer.
They do. We've had some providers with us practicing since the very beginning when the clinic opened. So people that have been here for 20 plus years.
Just out of the goodness of their heart.
Yeah. Jeez. Yeah.
Have you had to deal with people coming into the clinic who have coronavirus symptoms? And have you had anyone come through the clinic who's been positive?
We have had presumptive positive cases that we know of, and we are doing a lot of over-the-phone patient care coordination on that, trying to teach those patients how to stay home and isolate.
Let's talk a little bit about funding challenges right now that the clinic might be facing with the virus. How has that changed?
The model of our free clinic is we do get a small amount of money from the state. The city budget came out and we weren't a part of the city budget. And the majority of our patients right now are city residents, so that was a concern. However, the community has really had their eye on the clinic and has been touching base with us. I mean, I've received calls from just concerned community members, volunteers, and that's been a true testament, again, to how much the clinic means to the community and the community means to the clinic.
You had mentioned that you're offering telehealth now, and I'm wondering if that's something brand new that the clinic's been offering because of the outbreak, and how's that been going?
So it is brand new because of the nature of our patient base. Not everyone has the understanding or the ability to figure out how to do a video conference visit. And if you're adding language on top of it, it's definitely a learning curve on both sides. But if we can't reach a patient and we need to see them, we have the ability to get them in here on a Wednesday.
And are you kind of telling people, hey, you should probably wear a mask when you come in?
I'm glad you asked that, Chris, because this is my favorite story.
All right.
Our volunteers keep saying, what can we do to help? Well, we've had patients come in and need masks, and we've run out of being able to give masks to patients and have them for our providers. So we said, could you guys make masks for us? We received over 350 masks overnight.
Wow.
And our clinical services director, Meg, told me that after spending that first day passing out masks, she went into a grocery store and ran into one of our patients wearing the mask. And she was like, yes.
I feel like just talking to you today, I get the impression that with your job, you really get an opportunity to see the best of the community.
When I first started at the clinic, I remember in my interview, the board told me that sometimes even our patients were donors. You know, maybe the first time they came in, they couldn't afford their meds. And so they said, I can't pay for it this time. And then the next time they come in, they say, you know, I couldn't pay for meds last time. Here's the money plus a little, just keep the change. And it's amazing. You really do get to see the best in people and the potential in people. The patients just have great stories of what the clinic has meant to them and how it's helped them get back on their feet in regards to their health and the impact that good health has made on the rest of their quality of life.
Well, you guys are doing beautiful work and so important to the community. Summer Sage, Executive Director of the Harrisonburg Rockingham Free Clinic, thank you for everything and for your time today.
Thank you so much, Chris. I appreciate it.
To learn more about the free clinic and to hear a longer version of this interview, visit WMRA.org or use the app. For WMRA News, I'm Bob Levicky. Thanks for listening. Stay safely connected and enjoy your Tuesday.